Dr. William Moore of the University of North Carolina, Wilmington says he's a historian who uses material culture as a way to understand the past. His work focuses on issues of religion and belief systems. He says physical objects, whether they are buildings or furniture or decorative arts, can give you insights into religious beliefs that you don't necessarily get in the written record. Moore says all of his research starts with one simple act.
It always comes down to asking yourself a question and then trying to figure out what the answer to that question is so that you can explain it to other people.
Moore is in Madison for a material culture conference. We are sitting upstairs in the Student Union, surrounded by overstuffed chairs and heavy, ornate wooden furniture. He says the design and the decor of the building tells us this university has been around and intends to stay around for a long time. Moore has a lot of experience deciphering the messages good pieces of furniture can communicate. He got his start by looking at ceremonial chairs produced by 19th century Bostonian artisans for fraternal organizations, like the Masons.
Some of them were as much as 8 feet tall, and they were architectural as well as being a chair, that they would have a roof that would come out over the seat. I mean, they were more thrones, actually, than chairs. And some of them actually were tri-chairs, so you'd have three seats so that you could have various officers sitting in the various places within these chairs, and very heavily ornamented and inlaid with precious woods and incised and kind of very, you know, over-the-top Gothic ornamentation.
Part of Moore's research into these antique chairs began by looking in the same places we look today when shopping for furniture.
They had these engraved catalogs that they would send out to potential patrons that say, here are some designs for chairs. And I found that they published one that was called Lodge Furniture and another one that was called Church Furniture. And they had the same engravings, except this one was called Lodge Chair Number 4 and this one was called Pulpit Chair Number 4. So it was, you know, and they would take the square and compass off the front of it and put a cross in there. Same chair, same kind of iconography, different symbols, but still the idea about authority, power, importance.
Moore says being a historian, it's not far off from being a good detective. You have to follow where clues and curiosity lead you.
I followed a reference in one of the catalogs that said that we furnished the Masonic Temple in Haverhill, Massachusetts. So I went to Haverhill to look at these chairs, and suddenly I found myself in a Masonic lodge room that had been built in the 1870s, and I didn't know anything about the Masons, and it was full of these amazing murals on the walls and overstuffed Victorian furniture. The place was like a time capsule. It hadn't changed in 100 years. And I said, what the hell is this space about? I've never been in a space like this. It's not a church. It's not really a club. What is this space? And I started to do the research to try to answer that question for myself, and I found that there wasn't really anything written about Masonic temples. Nobody had explained what these buildings meant or why they were built the way they were or when were they built. And so that was my question. What does this space mean? What does this building mean? Why was it built? And why was it only built? These Masonic temples were largely built between 1870 and 1930. So then that's the next question, is what happened between to start them being built in 1870, and how come there aren't really any more like them built after 1930?
He says, as you keep answering those questions, your knowledge base grows, and sooner or later, you realize you know more about your subject than anyone else. The next hurdle is then to explain it in a way that makes it interesting and useful to others, especially when you're talking about building chairs for Masons.
The problem is there are so many different contexts for the object, right? So that there's not just what does the object mean in the culture as a whole, but it also means, you know, what are you saying about what you think about me by giving it to me, right? And what were the decisions that were made that you were making, and what does that say about you? So, right, it can drive you crazy, can't it?
So with all of his questions and answers and explaining, Does he see the world differently than he did before he started asking?
I don't see the world the way other people do. I guess it's safe to say that I'm always looking at what are the meanings in these objects and how are people expressing themselves through the things that they are collecting or they're using or the choices that they're making.
Keyboard. Keyboard, and some, and try, and try, and yeah, and some,